One, two. Okay, there we go. Not sure what happened. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Litecoin Underground podcast. Today, we've got Adam McBride in from a whole lot of things. I don't think I could even list his resume and its history in crypto, but primarily to talk about his recent launch of Bellscoin, which is now merge mined with Litecoin and Dogecoin. So if you're a miner, you get all three with the same effort, which is kind of wild. And we even talked last week in Spaces about there's something that just doesn't seem to make sense about that. How can you get three for one? But we talk about it a little bit, what that mechanism is. And it's an interesting conversation. I know I say that almost every week, that I guess I find a lot of things interesting. Adam was great as a guest. We felt like we could just have probably flowed for hours, honestly. We got, even after the mics turned off, we were talking about politics for like another half hour together. So it was a lot of fun. And so I'm glad to have him in. I hope we have him back again. We invite him to Spaces. Maybe we'll get something out of that. But, you know, it's an interesting project, Bellscoin, and I'm certainly going to grab a few. I'm interested to see if it turns into kind of this ordinals chain and continues to keep maybe the weight off of Litecoin if ordinals go there. Or who knows, maybe it's Dogecoin. I don't know. I haven't figured out if these merge mine chains are the best path forward or not. But, you know, they're unavoidable, and they are there. So I think it's worth listening to and understanding what they are. But of course, it's important that when we do these episodes, that we talk about our sponsor, Cake Wallet. As you guys know, we've been talking about them from the beginning. They've supported us and Litecoin for a long time. And I think what I like most about it is that it's really the all-in-one crypto app. You can spend your crypto at hundreds of places with gift cards using Cake Pay. It's compatible on both mobile and desktop operating systems. I know I use I have an Apple. I use it in the App Store primarily. You know they're going to be adding mWeb soon. That's the big thing. So they support all the privacy features, Bitcoin silent payments, Monero. You can run coin controls, custom nodes, all that kind of stuff. And, they make me say this part. They make using crypto a piece of cake. I know that sounds corny, but it's true. I really do like the app. It's my primary go-to wallet for mobile. It's really all I use. I use a little bit of Light Wallet here and there, but primarily I use Cake. So go download the app, check out their desktop, and enjoy the show. All right, guys, today we're going to have in Adam McBride to talk to us a little bit about Bellscoin and Litecoin and his kind of venture through the ordinal world. I think he's done quite a bit of. Of course, I'm Grant, hosting. You call me Underground, call me whatever you want. Animals in here, as he has been the last few weeks. So welcome, guys. And I think primarily, like we said, we want to kind of get an understanding of what's going on with Bellscoin. I'm personally kicking myself because Animal and I off air talked about this last week, and he's, we can go to this exchange and get it, and it was like 30 some odd cents, and I'm like, I'll figure it out. Didn't do anything, and here I am a week later and it's tripled in price. So I missed the boat, or maybe I did, and I don't know. You'll tell me I didn't, but hey, Adam. So early. I think the first thing that I want to understand is how did you guys find out about this Bellscoin origin story? Like, what is it? And sure. Yeah, how'd you learn of it?
Well, what it is Billy Marcus, who's the founder of Dogecoin. About 8 days before he did Dogecoin, he did this coin called Bells. So it's Bellscoin. It's a fork of Lucky Coin. And
okay,
he launched it, and 8 days later worked with the other co-founder and basically launched Dogecoin. And what happened, so like it does in crypto, Dogecoin literally took off. Like, people loved it. It really had that memetic power that we all know about Dogecoin. And Bells was basically forgotten. Within 18 months, Bells, nobody was mining it, and the chain died. And I had only heard about it this past December, you know, and somebody mm-hmm. had basically, it was around the Dogecoin kind of relaunch birthday. One of my friends had seen an old tweet from Billy, which said, you know, where he was connecting with, I think, Jackson Palmer, the other co-founder of Do- Doge, where they were tweeting back and forth, and Jackson was like, I want to launch a coin, and Billy Marcus was like, bro, I'll help you. I just launched my other coin, Bells, like a week ago. And my friend found that tweet, and I had no idea what was happening or what happened back then, but that got my curiosity going. And that got me in the Bitcoin Talk forum and figuring out what happened with this coin. That's kind of my thing. I like digging. And sure enough, that coin had been launched, died out because of lack of interest, and had tried to be restarted by like four or five other people at various times over the last decade. Failed every time. And when I saw that, and then I read what Billy was actually trying to do back then, which, I mean, look, we all know, if you know Billy Marcus on Twitter, you know he's basically anti-crypto. And when you look at how he launched Dogecoin, he launched Dogecoin kind of as a joke to make fun of crypto. I just thought it was really interesting, literally, that he created the most powerful meme coin on the planet. Here was the predecessor of it. I thought it was an incredible story. And that's when I contacted Luke helped spin it up. And we basically got it running, and within a week we announced it, and you know, kind of the rest is history. That's kind of like the rebirth story. The story behind, a little bit of interesting things behind the coin itself, was that when he launched it in the Genesis block, he put the word Nintendo. And that was because if you go read the old Bitcoin Talk forum, he wanted to make it part of, or kind of tied to, this Nintendo video game called Animal Crossing. And in Nintendo, in that game, the in-game currency is bells. It's called bells, right?
Okay.
And he was like, wouldn't it be great to have this like crypto that you could use like in games or as the trading market and stuff? So
and then in the real world also have like some sort of equivalent value. Yeah.
It's still the thing half of crypto working for, which is like, can we have an in-game currency? Does it work in games? Like, that's still a part of crypto that we're trying to figure out. So I think there's that really cool kind of tie-in to it. And so he put the word Nintendo in the Genesis block, just like, you know, Satoshi did with, you know, Chancellor on the brink of a bailout. He put Nintendo in the Genesis block. And the kind of interesting thing is when he did Dogecoin, you know, 8 days later, he says, and there are tweets that certify this, that he basically, you know, spinning up Dogecoin took him less than 5 minutes because he literally just copy pasted it and changed the tokenomics a little. But if you look at Dogecoin in that Genesis block, it says Nintendo. And that's a kind of interesting tie in, you know, with Bellscoin.
Well, so you said other people tried to relaunch it. What goes into relaunching it? Is it that like literally none of the coins had even been mined, and no one was running the nodes? And so somebody would download the node, trying to mine it, and then just lose interest in it? Is it kind of
exactly literally down? I mean, just like in the same way you could take, you know, the original Bitcoin source code and relaunch the chain. That's what people had done. And that's exactly what we did. And we quickly learned that 2013 tech is really, really bad. The chain was basically barely running. But within like 12 hours of my original tweet, it became, you know, we were mining it. I was mining it on, you know, my kid's old, you know, gaming PC, right? And within 12 hours of me making that tweet, I mean, a lot of people were able to mine it, but miners, people who follow me, you know, are in the mining business, and they spun up, you know, ASIC miners. And within 12 hours, it was being mined by ASIC miners in China, and basically impossible for an individual to mine. And it's gone, you know, pretty parabolic in the mining community, because there was obviously money to be made. So it had that traction. And there's kind of a whole story arc of, you know, us working with, you know, mining companies, Bitmain and stuff, to try and solidify the chain, because it was, you know, 2013 tech that just barely works today, especially when people wanted to like layer on ordinals and do all this kind of stuff for it. So that's been a process. And there were times, I told people, there were times when I thought the chain was going to completely die. We had literally almost full days where the chain was frozen, wouldn't produce new blocks. And luckily, very, very fortunately, Billy Marcus, when I relaunched it, I was able to get in touch with him. He actually helped me connect with some of the Dogecoin core developers, and they helped us, worked with some of the people who came on board with Bellscoin, some of our core devs, to basically keep the chain running. And those guys really helped us move the ball forward to where, you know, the last week or so, you saw it, we released our V3 of Bellscoin, which allowed merge mining and actually solidify the chain as like, it's like robust now. And I think
you relaunched the chain though, from what it's not like there's people who have not like Bill has a wallet from 2013.
That's like a lawnmower. Right? Like a lawnmower, you primed it and then
it's a relaunch.
It's a different chain
than the original.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Right. Original Genesis block. Did you change any of the tokenomics, any parameters at all?
We didn't change anything.
Yeah,
it's the exact same. So it has this kind of a different distribution curve than like Dogecoin, which has this very high, you know, Dogecoin even today produces, you know, the mining rewards is like 10,000 Doge per block, which is like 1.5 million Doge per day, which is like amazingly high. Bells has this really actually kind of great emission curve, in my opinion. Still fast at the beginning, but it quickly ramps down. And we're coming into those kind of last two epochs. So the next one, which is in about 90 days or so, will cut emissions by 90%. And then there's one more, maybe 180 days later, which cuts it down basically to 2 bell per block to infinity. So those are the kind of tokenomics that make it maybe interesting, maybe not. But for people who are interested in like, why would I want to maybe hold bells? This is kind of like that interesting tokenomics that gets people, you know, excited, because there was this, you know, kind of long time frame to accumulate when miners were receiving huge rewards and just dumping on the market, and people could get it for, you know, 14 cents, 15 cents, something like that. So there was that kind of like interest around it where people are like, oh, this could be really cool.
The tokenomics, just like Doge, make it where you almost have to merge mine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Because if you tried to survive on 2 bells per minute.
Yeah, really rough. Yeah. So merge mining was the thing. I mean, it's funny because almost immediately after we relaunched, Billy recommended, look, you guys got to merge mine this like ASAP. And so that got us kind of on that path, and working with, you know, the Doge core team to figure out how to best do this, because they're, you know, they had already done it. I mean, it's literally the same code, and they would have done differently. Helped us tremendously. Like I every time I do a show, I talk about how great the people were. Billy, you know, even though Billy will shit on, you know, crypto and stuff, I always give Billy credit for being really awesome and connecting us with people that helped a lot. And the communities were amazing and just gave us tremendous insights in how to kind of structure this thing to make it robust and actually live.
What point did Bitmain get involved? Was that after Billy was helping you out?
Yeah. I mean, Billy helped us almost immediately within the first week. Billy.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, but they very quick, obviously they were, you know, greatly interested in Bells for coin from a monetary perspective, you know, to sell their boxes. Right. So yeah, they've been there pretty much from the beginning. They contacted us early. And we've been the pools and everything. I've had some insights in, wow, like, this is probably the most competitive industry on earth, right? These guys are real killers. And it's a vicious business. But that's great in theory, because right, it brings costs down, it makes it hyper competitive. But the reality is that what we have is we have aligned incentives, which is like the secret sauce of crypto, where we have, you know, miners, we have the miners who produce the companies that produce the boxes, they all want to make money. Mm-hmm. Everybody in, you know, our community obviously wants it to be successful, so people will talk about it and stuff. And we have this core group of developers who were there early, you know, obviously got a bunch of Bell for themselves, and they're aligned to, you know, keep this thing running too. And for me, it's very much a legacy thing now, where it's like I'm part of this story of Bellscoin. And, you know, I said in the early days of it, man, my whole thing is just, I just got to keep this chain running. Like, how can I keep the chain running? And I think you know, knock on wood, that we got that part solved. And now my kind of job is how do I attract people who want to do interesting things on Bells, right? How do we kind of become, like for Litecoin, how do we become a testing ground for Litecoin, right? Is there something that Litecoins are kind of hesitant to implement because, you know, you don't want to mess up Litecoin? Like, let's try it on Bells. It's basically the same infrastructure. Let's try it here. If it works, great. It can go to Litecoin and then maybe it goes to Bitcoin. Like, let's do this. You know, and I'm very interested in kind of attracting people who want to build interesting things to bring them to Bells Coin.
Well, yeah, I think Animal was talking about drive chains, right? That's been a little bit of our conversation. And I had a couple weeks ago, we had Paul from Layer 2 Labs on. And I think that's interesting. And what's funny to me, though, is that merge mining is very similar to having drive chains when it comes to miners, right? Miners want to receive rewards. They want to collect fees. So whether they do it through a separate chain with its own Genesis block and tokenomics and whatever it is, and does its, you know, maybe it's an Ethereum chain, you know, copy that script mined, merge mined.
Right.
Is that functionally the same thing as having a drive chain? The only difference being the various units of account that kind of compete against each other, right? So it's somewhat collaborative. Everybody wants script hashing to do well. They want the miners to make money, but you end up having coins competing against each other instead of necessarily maybe like focusing on utility. You end up with the tokenomics game becomes the game as opposed to like trying to find genuinely useful things for the thing to do. So,
boy, the genuinely useful question is really, that's the thing, you know, we're still very much struggling with in all of crypto,
right? Yeah, 100%.
Think about like, what are the great use cases or the really impactful ones that have brought on additional users over the last, you know, since the last cycle? You know, there's only a handful. Like the last cycle, I'd say, you know, OpenSea was the killer use case. How simple is that? It's like a marketplace, but the timing market worked. This cycle, it's kind of like we have pumped up fun on Solana, right? I mean, you look at Solana, Solana was very much almost a dead chain, right? But the kind of stars aligned for them where they had, you know, wallet infrastructure works, you know, the DEX screeners work, the Radium works, and then Solana, Pump Fun came in and hit on this model for releasing meme coins. And you may not like meme coins, you know, whatever, but that attracted users, right? And
well, so it attracted money.
And it attracted, well, of course.
Like, people buying and trading. That's essentially right. That's what you're talking about.
The reality is that crypto has a bit of where it's all about the number go up technology, right? And the number go up technology is the most important thing in crypto. It's the way attention moves. And we may not like it. You know, people who, like probably you guys and myself, we want freedom money. We want people to transact and be able to be self-sovereign and do peer-to-peer trading. But the reality is, at this point in time, most of the world doesn't care about that, right? And so number go up, like even just look at Bells Coin. The thing that, I mean, we've been working for the last, you know, 10 months. But the thing that moved the needle was, oh my God, it pumped 5X, 6X in 2 weeks, right? And all of a sudden, your timeline's full of people who are like, what's Bells Coin, right? It's like, you don't understand. Right. Working, you know, we have over 100 million ordinals. We have, you know, a new, better tech that's literally a proof of work L1 that's bigger, faster, stronger than Doge and has all these great properties and stuff, but nobody cares, right? They care that the price pumped, right? And so I think, you know, any community has to kind of understand that that's part of the game. My feeling is, though, the thing that really, really moves the needle, like if you can get it and it's really, really hard, but if you can get it, if you can get a great app on your chain, that is the difference maker. If you look at, for example, I mean, it was pumped out fun on Solana, literally ripped Solana back from the dead. Or you look at Polymarket, right? Polymarket is on the timeline now. Everybody's gambling on it. It's on an L2. But nobody cares, right? They just want to use an app that's great. And so making that happen would be, if I could wave a magic wand on Bells Coin, that would be the one I would do. but we all know how hard it is to make. Obviously, it's extremely difficult. There are so many things that need to align to get, you know, your product right, the timing right, the market, all that sort of stuff has to hit for something to really hit. And that's, you know, from a business perspective, that's really hard.
Well, right. In those, like, yeah, the Poly market, I haven't been on there yet, but I have a basic idea of what it is. But it's doing something unique. And we just talked about this on Spaces. That was my whole thing about adoption on Wednesday, just talking about being able to do something with the blockchain that you can't do anywhere else realistically. Sure. Or that, like, you know, that you do it easily, or it's easily communicated what the value is.
And why is it?
I think we've done a poor job.
Yeah. Why is it better done on a blockchain than the way it's currently done?
Right? Well, my point to that, and I made a tweet about it a few weeks ago, it's like, we've already found that use case. It was found with Satoshi Dice in whatever, 2013. It's gambling. Like, gambling is the easy. I mean, we might laugh and say, oh, well, that's stupid. Well, gambling's like $500 billion a year industry, right?
It's addictive too.
And it's addictive, and it's human nature and all the rest of it. And you think about it. I mean, do I think there's a million more use cases than that? Of course. But it's the one where, what are the problems with gambling? The problems with gambling in the old days with bookies and stuff is like, the bookie's concerned that you're not going to pay if you lose, and you're concerned the bookie's not going to pay you if you win. Right? Mm-hmm. Crypto solves that problem. I mean, that is a huge solve, right? And so, yeah, I think, and I think Polymarket may run into some problems because there's big money and a whole bunch of reasons why the US doesn't want Polymarket and doesn't want gambling to happen on crypto. But the reality is that crypto should eat the entire gambling market. That's the first killer use case other than sound money for crypto, right? So yeah, I agree. It's not the ideal first use case, right?
Well, but you know, the whole point is
the easiest to solve.
It's the easiest to solve. Absolutely.
Yeah. And the other part of the international aspect, like yesterday, what I put out there, I said something about, like, I was thinking about like how the lottery works and Powerball, and because I was laughing, somebody won, you know, like $1 billion Powerball, and then they had to pay $600 million in taxes. And I'm like, what a racket. Like, they can just say, hey, all the money that goes in gets paid out to the winner, but knowing they're going to take 60% of it. Right. So it's like, I started thinking, why is the lottery not on a blockchain? Why aren't we doing fundraisers? You know, like, you could raise money from all over the world anonymously.
It's because ingrained power structures don't want that to happen. Right. I mean, that's just, that's literally the way everything works.
You go to a high school basketball game. We're doing a 50-50 raffle. Like, it's up front. You know, half the money ain't coming back to the crowd, but we all get it. So, I mean, if you had, you could do fundraisers. Say it's 10% goes to your thing and 90% gets paid out to whoever that wins. That's such a simple thing. And the fact it hasn't been developed is so strange to me. And I'm not a developer, so maybe I should be doing it.
It's not strange, though. The regulatory environment is not accepting of this, and you are risking your life and livelihood if you build it. I mean, I was literally just on a space yesterday, and we were, you know, talking with guys who were, you know, hardcore devs, and you know, we're talking about a gambling app, and they're like, not going to touch it, not touching it. You know, why would I put myself and my family at risk for this, right? Because we have this burdensome regulatory environment where you do it, you might end up behind bars, you know. And so, yeah,
get on a boat and go, like, what is it, 10 miles off the shore and be in international waters and do your thing.
I'll give you this. I mean, I live in Costa Rica, right? And sports gambling was huge here for a while, the sports books. And they literally arrested almost everybody who ran sports books in this country, got arrested. If you ran a big enough sports book, the U.S. would grab you on a flight to Spain, or if you happen to pass through Miami, they'd literally grab you at the airport. So the long arm of the USA grabs you anyway. I mean, look, man, Roger Ver, you know, everybody, the long
arm, com,
you literally can't hide. You literally can't hide. If they want you, they're going to get you. And so I think to that point, it's, you know, for me, it's terrible because it prevents people from building great stuff. And, you know, why should somebody in, you know, Africa not be able to build the next great fantasy football app? They should be able to, in my view, but because of this sort of you know, reign of terror of regulatory environment. Crypto's just had a boot on its neck, and it's sad.
Yeah, I think the restrictions on the mobile providers, like the phone providers, and that choke point too of mm-hmm. Google Play Store or basically totally. Apple, right? Like if you're going to build something significant, you have to have the blessing of Apple. I think totally. That's also been will continue to be a big problem, which makes like, because we had a guy from Stack Mobile on last week talking a little bit about SpaceX and what Elon's doing is kind of can eventually get around that. Like if Elon just built jailbroken phones and started
that'd be amazing,
distributing them, and you could use Starlink, like what a oof. What a revolutionary thing that could be, right?
Do the network thing, man.
Look, it's actually surprising they let him have. I mean, I said this, and I almost was saying it jokingly, is like the timing of Space Force is pretty interesting. He starts putting satellites into outer space and building his own rocket ships, and all of a sudden we have to have a Space Force.
To protect him, yeah.
Like who else? I mean, did he feel tired? I wonder if Elon went, okay, they're obviously looking at me and whoever, Jeff Bezos, putting people in space, and now they got to have a military up there. Like, anyway, let's talk more about Bellcoin.
Interesting times, my friend. It is interesting times, no doubt.
Well, so what's the let me get the nuts and bolts of Bellcoin. So Bellcoin is, what from what I could tell, is 1 megabyte blocks, right? Mm-hmm. Every minute, just like Doge.
Yep.
Is there,
but there's more, there's much more that? Space in it than Doge. Luke had a really good tweet the other day, which I could try to find. Yeah, but it's much more robust as far as the amount you can put in. Got SegWit, it's gonna have Taproot in
That's what I was gonna ask.
So yeah, it's much more robust. It can hold a lot more data than basically any of the main chains. Let me see if I have that.
You guys are gonna put OpCat. You're gonna run OpCat on it as well, right? Is that the same time as Taproot?
OpCat is probably gonna hit testnet within the next probably within the next 2 weeks, and hopefully shortly after Taproot goes live, it'll come on to mainnet, all things considered, you know, hopefully. I'm not exactly sure, but yeah, so just looking at the throughput, Luke had a great breakdown of like per 10 minutes, right? Kind of comparing it to BTC, right? Mm-hmm. And so BTC is obviously 4 megabytes every 10. Bell about every 10 is 40 megabytes every 10. Compared to like Doge is approximately 10 every 10 minutes. So
that's right. So it's that SegWit that's making the difference for you guys. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So your thought is, it's been weird. It's been weird to me that Doge hasn't done some of the things like SegWit and Taproot.
I would have thought the same thing, but after speaking with the developers, basically they had to make some really tough choices early on that have prevented these kind of, now they can't do it because it would require basically a hard fork. And there's no way, you know, Doge is at that kind of decentralized point where there's no way they can get enough consensus to basically do these kind of hard forks. And so,
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but the miners, it's the same miners that would be soft forking.
We did a hard fork. We actually did a hard fork. It's required a hard fork to do some of the stuff that we did. And so as far as my understanding goes,
because the difference between a hard fork and a soft fork is just the amount of consensus for miners, right?
Imagine you guys are more Litecoin guys, but realize you guys know how hard it is to get anything done in the Litecoin.
Yeah, yeah. Right? When
you have herds of cats, right? And you're trying to, you know, get them to move. It's very difficult. We had the advantage of our community at the time is, you know, it's 100 guys, right? Maybe. Right, yeah. And there's, you know, 10 of us who are kind of like, you know, basically hold the strings to it. So we could kind of force this through. I just think Doge at 10 years on with, you know, literally millions of people who hold Dogecoin and just this massive, you know, grouping of interests, it's just very, very difficult to get consensus to change stuff. I just I just think that's kind of works.
All right, the mining pools would have to get on board, essentially,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. It's the miners are the same exact miners for all three of these chains. They're the same people, right?
Yeah.
And I've often said Litecoin's benefited a lot from having Charlie be that figurehead, because it's like we generally are going to go, if he's into something or if he gives the kind of stamp of approval, it makes it easier to get the kind of, I guess we'll call it like the political will to get things done.
Absolutely.
I think he wishes he didn't have to have that status and that we could do things on our own, you know?
Yeah.
But that's still reality at this point until he maybe just passes away or just totally goes, just decides to completely check out. And that may come someday.
Well, so. I mean, Litecoin, it has that. I think it's a little bit of an advantage. Still requires consensus, but you have somebody kind of direct. We see when like Bitcoin has no kind of leader, obviously, and it's just a mess. You can't do anything in Bitcoin, right? It's a total,
governed by politics now, right? Like it's just
literally a political game. Yeah.
There's definitely an advantage. You're right.
Still being small to get it done, basically.
So is your thought with Bell's Coin? Do you guys want to make it the ordinal chain? Is that your goal?
I think that we're definitely leaning into that. That, you know, we have, I don't know, 100 some odd million inscriptions already. I think that being robust and fast for artists or creatives or gaming or something is definitely what we want to lean into right now. You know, how that plays out, I mean, definitely you've seen it in Litecoin. You know, I was there since the birth of Ordinals. It's kind of faded, and why are we doing this? What's the problem? You know, so, you know, the market's got to figure that out and figure a way forward. But certainly Bell's is positioned so it can take advantage of kind of whatever somebody comes up with next.
Would you guys consider implementing MWeb?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Really? Although I don't know, you know, what's the advantage of it? I mean, this is the thing. When I was talking on a tweet the other day about it with Litecoin, it's like Litecoin's already done it. They've shown that it works, it can happen. You know, I mean, look, people could do whatever they want. If you know, the community wants MWeb, awesome, let's go for it, right? But my feeling is, like, what's Litecoin interested in? Like you said, drive chains, maybe, right? Where that the devs know it's going to be a while to get it on Litecoin because it requires, you know, some real consensus building. And you know, try it on Bell's Coin, where the community is far smaller, and we can actually push things forward and like try it. Let's try it here.
There's
and,
less capital risk too, right?
Oh, like there's infinitely less capital risk, right? And so, yeah. And plus, this is a thing that was kind of highlighted for me in a space, you know, 2 weeks ago. Really smart investor came in and said, you know, this is the thing about Bell's that I like, is that if I want to build something or do like drive chains on Bell's Coin, that experiment may fail. But for a very small amount of money, I can own a significant percentage of Bell's Coin related to my wealth, right? So he's rich. Okay, he needs a lot of Bell's. I'm not rich. I don't need many Bell's. But if I'm going to do the building anyway, I can own a significant piece of the underlying infrastructure. And so when I'm talking about it, when I'm building it, when I'm, you know, broadcasting out what I'm doing on social media, I'm helping support the underlying infrastructure, which I will benefit from regardless of if my experiment or my project works, right? Which I thought was a really, really interesting way of looking at Bell's Coin right now, which is like, you know, from an investment standpoint and a builder standpoint, you can not only build the thing, but you can own the underlying infrastructure to a significant percentage where even if your thing fails, you know, you supporting that the chain itself, you can be rewarded. I thought that was a really, really interesting thing that I'd never considered.
Hmm. You got a follow up animal or no?
No, I think it's absolutely right. I mean, this is a question we were asking to Paul because he's, he's really interested in pushing on Litecoin.
I actually don't know that he is.
Well,
I think he still wants it on Bitcoin, and it's like, he's almost become this his life's mission to just
get right
Bitcoiners.
bro.
He's going out all the wrong way. All he does is shit on Bitcoiners all day, and then he expects them to put his drive chains on, you know?
I mean, we saw, you know, I do a ton of Bitcoin spaces and talks and stuff. And I mean, I think at last count, there were 85 L2s being built on Bitcoin now. Well, you know, yeah. And it's like, we know it's going to be a bloodbath, like almost none, probably none of those are going to work.
It's so competitive. Yeah. It's
so competitive. You know, but the good thing is that people are trying again, right? That conversation was so closed for years. And I think that's been the greatest benefit of Ordinals, is just reopen the conversation to building on Bitcoin, which is fantastic.
That, and I think it's illustrated how the fees can really be ramped up quickly.
Oh yeah,
with like almost no users, right? Like, what was it, a couple of days ago? There were some people stacking, like I think it was like 12,000 people stacking Bitcoin. I'm not even sure what that means.
But it was some sort of some way of going on to another thing to, but you only had 12 blocks to do it, or 5 blocks to do it.
Such a it's like a farming Ponzi game type of thing. I don't know
about the network to its knees.
I don't know if I trust anything that's like, put your Bitcoin to work. It's like, I don't believe it.
No, I think it's bringing, because there's a lot of people that I feel are kind of disillusioned, and they think that, you know, Bitcoin is unstoppable, and it's, you know, it's the only chain, you know, there is no second best. I don't believe that at all. And more and more people are starting to see the light, I feel.
Totally.
So having options for them that aren't Bitcoin Cash, you know, blockchains that are, in my opinion, harder than both those chains, you know?
100%. Yep.
I think the timing is good for Bellscoin because of that.
Totally. Totally. I think Bitcoin Season 2 exposed the maxis for, first of all, the tiny number of people that is. It's literally a couple of handfuls at most of like the really hardcore guys who are Bitcoin or nothing. Like, that's silly, you know? And I think the majority of us finally woke up to like, actually, that's silly. We don't like that. And, you know, the idea of Bitcoin as, you know, digital cash, you know, electronic peer-to-peer cash system, like, it's so dead, it's, you know, it's laughable. And so, you know, those of us who got into crypto for the core idea of like freedom money, like, there have to be alternatives. And I think, you know, those
left.
Yeah.
Lightning was the last hope, and it's become very clear it doesn't work. And so that's been the most disappointing part, is like, they've just, instead of saying, hey, okay, it's a little broken, we need to maybe change some things, or look, they've just said, well, we don't want digital cash anymore. You're like, how did that just happen?
She never said digital cash. She said it was a store of value. Come on,
bro. Oh, how yeah. My God.
People, come on.
Literally, it's the title of the paper, bro. Come on, man.
It's in bold. I actually have it sitting right over here.
It's so funny, dude. It's so funny. But so I always appreciate people who are like pushing envelopes. And obviously, you know, most of the coins and stuff that are launched, it's not going to be anything. But, you know, us figuring this out and figuring out, you know, how to do this, you know, or what's going to be the thing, is our challenge right now. And so, you know, how it works, what it works on, it's really difficult. I pose the question as a kind of thought experiment, which is like, you know, I say it to Bitcoiners, and I'll say, you know, if Bitcoin actually was stuck at, you know, $10,000 for Bitcoin forever, but we got freedom money and took government out of Bitcoin, would you be down for that? And the response isn't yet. For me, it's fuck yes. Absolutely. I'd take that haircut every day of the week for freedom. But the response of the Bitcoiners is, well, the tokenomics make that, blah, 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 it's $1 billion of Bitcoin. Dude, is this about number go up, or is this about freedom from the tyranny of governments? What's it about? What are you here for? And a lot of the Bitcoin maxis have been exposed that it's about number go up technology for them. It's not about freedom. And I think that's been a real awakening for me, because I did not believe that was true.
So like when Wall Street invades, walk on Wall Street, right? Yeah. This is what happened to Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, look, everybody loves number go up technology. Everybody wants to be rich, right?
Yeah.
Everybody. And nobody escapes that. That's fine. We understand that. But what are you really here for? Right. I think that that core is important.
I think that became evident, most evident to me when, when I would always be, it was the lying. It was the things where you're just like, this just isn't, you're just out there saying false things. And that's what really got to me is that, and it, again, it's a core group of people. Like you said, it's not like it's everybody who's ever been a Bitcoin. I think the people that are peer-to-peer digital cash guys are, have moved on. You know, that I think in the last 6-8 months, really Litecoin has seen a good group of people kind of, I guess, defectors. That's what I would call it. Again, it's the recognition that Lightning doesn't work and I can't get anything done here, right? This drama is not worth it. Let me go somewhere where maybe I can do something. And I think, and it Bell's coin is funny because we were talking before you came on. I'm looking at tokenomics. I'm like, I don't know, man, this is kind of, all the coins got distributed and now we're finding out about it. I mean, merge buying is a smart move, but you know, it's like having a vibrant script ecosystem. Like, I think we're going to have two different worlds. You have like BCH, BTC banging each other in the head and SHA. Although they did collaborate, I guess this week a little bit, they talked, but they're ever competing. There's no, until BCH merge mines, I think they're just
going to be the other way around, dude.
Throats. Yeah, you're always going to be.
Bitcoin's going to merge mine with BCH. That's my prediction.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, dude. No, that's it's designed that way. Bitcoin Cash has been engineered to do that, to destroy Bitcoin. It is more resilient to hash rate fluctuations than Bitcoin is. If Bitcoin stumbles, man, Bitcoin Cash is going to be there to pick up the slack, and it's going to gobble it up.
That's a bold statement, animal.
That's my investment thesis in Litecoin and Dogecoin, you know, and now Bells, right? Like, that's why. Because that kind of stuff is impossible with script mining.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That is interesting. I don't know about that. But I don't know.
Look what I got here, guys. I got this thing. This Bells. Is from this is from 84 million. It's a coaster. It's got the B, the L, and the D, but for B is Bells now, I guess.
The
how we're deciding.
It's funny, I was on his podcast, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, and he's got this really cool like artwork piece, which is the three, you know, Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Dogecoin, you know, art piece. And it's got the, you know, Genesis blocks text for each one, right? And he didn't know what Nintendo was. He thought, you know, when I met him at the Litecoin conference, he thought it was just, oh, you know, Doge, much wow, much something, you know, he just thought it was like a jokey thing until he realized, oh, wow, it's from Bellscoin. Like, that was like an interesting thing that he discovered because he had the thing on his wall, you know, for years. And here it was, he like found out for the first time, you know, what that was about. So I thought it was pretty cool.
That's some epic foreshadowing.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Really?
For sure. The but to the point on like Litecoin and just kind of put it this way, it's like, I know a lot of people in Litecoin, when I see Litecoin kind of come through my timeline, I still see a ton, you know, people talking about, oh, the number's going to go up. It's going to be better than, you know, we're going to get bigger returns than Bitcoin and stuff. I just think that's the wrong strategy from Litecoin's perspective. I think Litecoin really, and I talked with a lot of guys about Litecoin, and I love the idea of the VPM. I thought that was like virtual private money is the best branding I've heard in crypto in like probably a couple of years. Like, it's fantastic branding. Like, if Litecoin leans into that and leans into like cheap transactions and, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Litecoin's literally the largest privacy coin by market cap, right? That no one's talking about.
Yeah. But again, then it's back to like, well, how much is the number going to go up? Is the number going to go up? No, it should be like leaning into this like nearly free and private transactions, right? So it's not, then you're just looking for use cases. How do we onboard, do what kind of Bitcoin did early stages, which is like, how do we get businesses? How do we get banks? How do we get individuals? How do we get everybody to use it, right?
Yeah, lean into the stability, the security.
Yeah, and literally don't even worry about number go up. Like, literally take number go up off the table for a decade and just talk about use. This is the most useful crypto on earth, right? And it's private. Like that is something that people will be like, oh my God, this is great. That's awesome. And then you can get into the history and the story and Charlie and all this sort of amazing stuff around Litecoin. But the framing of number go up is so, bro, you're never going to be able to beat Bitcoin. It's just, it's your never, right? And so, you know, I don't know. That's me from a branding and marketing standpoint of just like what Litecoin should and Litecoin, you know, community should lean into because it's your superpower. And yeah, I don't know. That's my rant.
Dude, I mean, I've been doing spaces for almost 3 years, basically saying exactly what you've been saying. I refuse to talk about the price. I just refuse. Yeah. I think it's the stupidest conversation. It's all completely guessing.
Yep.
And until you have people that are interested in using the coin because it's useful, it serves some purpose for them, you're just playing a game. It's just pure gambling.
Yep.
And so we talked literally on Wednesday. That was episode, what I call it, how to gain adoption. And that was what I said. It's about finding ways that this coin brings value to businesses so that more people accept Litecoin as payment. Oh, now, whether it's Litecoin and Dogecoin, I really don't care which coin it is, but that they can extract some value out of the blockchain. They like the finality. I get payment in my freaking account like 2 minutes after you come into my store. That's a lot faster than credit cards. I don't pay credit card fees. I don't have to worry about a customer signing up or whatever information. They can just, it's digital cash. Like literally cash is dying, but cash is valuable for people who run, you know, there used to be really high cash businesses like vending machines. Shit. Maybe that's where we should be focused on step one.
I talk with a guy named Ray Youssef, who's and he, you know, obviously is pushing for like, how do we reach Africa and reach Africans? He calls it like financial apartheid, where you literally can't, you know, you live in neighboring countries, yet your banking systems don't work between each other, right? If you even have a banking system, right? And he leans into this, and like, this is a space where, you know, they were using a few years ago, they were using Dogecoin because Dogecoin was like, near free transactions, people could use it. It was fast, easy. You could have it on your phone on an app, right? And now they've moved to like Tron and whatever, USDT on Tron, because it's free, right? On maybe a centralized blockchain, you know, I don't really know.
It's stable.
Yeah. And it's stable, 100%, right? And so, yeah, I just think like these are the opportunities that certainly Litecoin has like a real head start and could maybe make something happen.
I mean, a multi-coin feature is certainly possible, and I think it'd be easier to push something like BTC Pay Server, you know, to because you need to bootstrap the circular economy, and I think that's a great tool.
Yep, totally.
And it's multi-coin; you can easily add bells to it, and I think you guys might be working on that eventually, hopefully.
We're trying. I'm talking with the guys who have the Dogecoin app, you know, for Doge, you know, hey, can we get bells in there, man? Because it'd be amazing, right? It's always, you know, this is what we're always trying to do is get adoption, make it easy for people. Even, you know, yesterday I was talking with the guys from like Ghosty Cash, which is Ghosty Cash lets you, whatever, I want to send in Ethereum, yet get Bitcoin on the other side, right? It's one of these like payment mechanism things. And I'm like, hey, can we get bells in there? Because right now people have to go to an exchange and take it in, take it out. You know, I'm like, hey, this would be a nice opportunity for you to maybe make some money here.
I would do that. Totally. Honestly, that'd be my preferred way to acquire it, is just swap.
It's a Ghost swap. eCash, you said?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna sign up right now.
Ghosty. If you look on Twitter, what is it on Twitter? Yeah, they're good guys. I had them on a podcast, actually used their service to test it out and stuff. And it can be like completely anonymous to an outside. Obviously they're in like Germany or something, so they're regulated and all this sort of stuff. So it's Ghosty, ghosty.cash is their like website. So it can be anonymous, although it's, you know, not anonymous maybe to them, but anonymous to outside sources of like what you're transferring and stuff. And you know, I just look at it as basically another kind of what's it changed now or whatever. You know, being able to bridge to different cryptos and stuff.
My ultimate dream long term is that these merged mined coins, the miners themselves, this is in my brain. Maybe you can build this. Are you ready, Adam? Somehow the miners themselves act as they're looking for stability in their mining rewards, and so they're willing to kind of counter trade their own assets against each other. So like, if anytime I want to swap Litecoin for Dogecoin, I get a rate that's based mostly on the mining rewards, like the ratio. Like I get 10,000 a minute or whatever. Okay, so in 10 minutes I get 100,000 Dogecoin and I get, I don't know what would be right now, 25 Litecoin maybe right now? No, maybe less than that, 18. But the, so that ratio is hopefully where these end up long term somehow. Like if they had that ability to create, to create like almost, well, not so much the market cap, more about the reward schedule. Again, this is my crazy idea that I'm always that I know. Yeah, they're going to trade against each other consistently. Bells, Doge, and Litecoin. They'll have a certain ratio they trade just based on that reward schedule. I don't know if miners are going to want the most value they can get.
Schedule, which I there was actually somebody trying to do that on Bitcoin. They were trying to basically create a betting market around rewards so that miners, you know, disparate miners or pools could basically have a market, like a gambling market for who might win the next block kind of thing, where people
like futures trading, really, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is, bro, humans love this, right? The ultimate let's extrapolate everything, right?
And bet on it.
And bet on it, right? It's so crazy. But that in theory could remove risks from miners and stuff like that. But yeah, there were some guys, they still may be building it, who were trying to do that on Bitcoin.
Or like you could give money to certain miners, and if they won a block, they had to pay you
exactly
a reward. Is that kind of what it was? But if they lost your money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you get odds against it. That's actually pretty cool. People do love to gamble, man.
I love it, man.
Yeah, it's just so funny that what you were saying, though, because I just can't get over. I feel like our whole conversation on Wednesday Animal was, it would have been great to have you in there because we were talking a lot about adoption. Then we started talking about merge mining, and there's somebody in our community who's kind of not a, I don't know, I want to say he's a doubter of merge mining. And it's easy to doubt because you go, this doesn't make any sense. How can you just keep adding chains? Like, there's got to be a limit to how many we can add and still... Wow. I know, that's what I'm saying. In your mind, you go, that doesn't make sense. How can you get something for nothing? That doesn't make sense.
Well, there's not, I mean, I look at it, I look at it differently. There's no, well, crypto, of course you can get something for nothing. I mean, that's
crypto. Magic, right? Dogecoin.
Literally magic. But, you know, I mean, at the core, I have deeper thoughts about that. But to merge mining itself, you know, you can, right? The way I frame it in my smooth brain is, you know, these mining machines are guessing a number, right? And it's like a lottery. They're guessing a number. And when they guess that number, they're guessing it on three different, you know, Dogecoin, Litecoin, and Bellscoin. They're guessing it for all three chains at the same time. And when it hits on one, they win that block, right? But they're just guessing numbers, right? So you could merge mine unlimited. Basically, but, number of chains, and so
why, for example, hasn't Digibyte merged mine yet?
I don't know. You know, I haven't looked at it at all.
You know, I was looking that up. I think it is Animal, and is I it? Think it's the reward is just not significant enough.
I'm looking at the hash rate.
Anyone and to care?
They've only got like 14 terahashes, right? Whereas Bells now has 867 terahashes.
We went over whatever.
Went over one petahash or something, right?
Yeah, petahash. Yeah.
I'm not sure how accurate these numbers are. Like where mining pool stats is getting it. Like I'm like, but it is. I feel at this point, Bells is eternal. Yeah. Right. Like, I feel like you guys created something that's going to outlive all of us.
And that is, you're the first person who said it to me, and it's powerful. Like that.
Congratulations. That is epic.
Yes. Thank you. That has been my goal for the last, you know, from maybe 2 weeks into the project where I realized how clunky blockchains can be. That was my whole goal. And it feels like we've crossed that line. And certainly this last week, when there were brief periods of time where, you know, Bell's coin was literally had the highest hash rate of any of the, you know, Dogecoin or Litecoin. You know, when I saw that, I was like, wow, this really does feel like, you know, it's going to be
pretty wild.
Yeah. And it's wild. And I just feel an honor to be a part of it for sure.
And you did it in less than 9 months.
Bro, it's like, that's
pretty crazy, dude. Honestly,
I'm just telling you, the world, like, all I can say is it's blessings, right? You know, I don't know how spiritual you guys are, but it's blessings. And you know, the number of people who came in to help, it's just, you know, fortune or luck or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that we have like this dev team, which is like, I mean, I work, the founder of Emblem Vault, Shannon Code, I consider one of, you know, a true genius and a visionary. And when I connected him with kind of our lead dev and his team, and my founder, Shannon, was like, holy cow, this guy is incredible. And he's never said that about like any dev he's ever worked with. I was like, oh my God, how lucky am I? Like, what are the odds that this guy saw my tweet, decided to get involved and become like the lead dev of Bell's coin? Like, how is that even possible? Like, that is right. Just complete luck and timing and whatever, you know, that's not me. That's somebody else making this happen. And so that's just a blessing.
Yeah. I'm kind of hopeful that Bell's becomes, if it does, let's say this ordinal thing becomes, well, you know, it's permanent and, kind of NFT world.
Look, NFTs are not going anywhere, man. And I look at them as NFTs, and they're not going anywhere for sure.
And so, does Bell's coin become the side chain, drive chain that does ordinals, and that's just your jam, you know? And it does, in a way, does leave Litecoin to just continue doing what it's supposed to do. You can't control this stuff. It's all going to become. It's going to do what it's going to do, but. I kind of do like that idea of, if you're interested in it, you can go do it on Bell's coin. It still helps support hash rate. It's good for securing all these chains. And it's, in my opinion, that's basically the same as a side chain. So this is another, because we talked about this with Paul. What is the difference? There really is not a huge amount of difference when it comes to supporting miners, because that's really, at the end of the day, what we have to have is vibrant ecosystems that feed the miners.
Totally. 100%. You know, it's interesting. And I mean, I don't know how much you guys know about my history, but you know, I was there, we were there at the birth of Ordinals. We actually had Casey on our show 6 months before, you know, Ordinals went live. So we're there at the birth of Ordinals and at the birth of, you know, Ordinals on Litecoin. And it's so interesting. Like, you never know. Like, they didn't take off on Litecoin. I thought it was going to be great. I thought there were going to be builders and it was going to be, you know, it was really going to take off. And it kind of, you know,
buttered up. Yeah, Litecoin's narrative has been trashed by the maxis so hard. Like, they pick on us, man.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah. There's so much, these things are so complicated. You know, I wish, you know, more Litecoiners would have been bullish on it and like, taking an interest in it and, you know, built out some wallets that are easy to use and just made it easier. But we just couldn't get the developer traction on Litecoin. I felt like it just, you know, there were just not enough people to really kind of move the needle. And yeah, for whatever reason, look, I still hold a ton of Litecoin ordinals and, you know, I just, from a cool perspective, you know, I'm still, you know, still involved. But yeah, just, it's so difficult to say what's going to work for what community and what's not. It's just,
I feel like the market's also maturing a bit. The fact that you've got such a great dev on your team now, I think that's indicative that great devs are moving towards things that are harder. Totally, you know, they're less impressed by NGU technology, and they want something that's got staying power. That's something totally. With like real principles.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. I mean, they do chase narrative. They chase narrative, and they chase the money through, and they chase attention. There's no doubt. I mean, we saw that with Bitcoin ordinals. I'm just obviously the 85 L2s and all this sort of stuff. It's like, you know, I've talked to devs from like literally every blockchain on earth who've come back to Bitcoin or come over to Bitcoin, right? Because, you know, the users come, then the money comes, then the devs come.
Then the devs, so, yeah.
That's definitely happened. And part of it for Bells, I think, is, you know, when number goes up and people are excited, you know, if we can pull devs, like I've talked to probably 10 devs over the last week of literally I'll be in their DMs like, hey, man, come build something. I see you're thinking about building this over here. What do you think about building it on Bells? Right. You know, it's going to be near free. I can connect you with our core devs. I can get you lined up. I get you all the APIs and everything. Like, you know, try it over here. If it breaks and fails, doesn't matter. You can buy a significant portion of the infrastructure for 20 grand. And, you know, you can buy the underlying token for 20 grand or something and, you know, be a part of it. I don't know. That's my current strategy for attracting, you know, trying to attract that killer app, which is going to like actually move the needle for Bells Coin long term.
So you're more concerned with that, which is, I mean, like a lot of people, myself included, we're kind of curious when Binance, you know. I heard there's a rumor that they're mining Bells and keeping the rewards.
I think there's zero question they're mining Bells. Zero question. I think what I've seen now from the pools, and we saw this, like if you noticed the hash rate early on when it first went to merge mining, all the pools jumped on board. Like the pools were all there. They didn't announce and make it open to the people who are in the pools for a solid week or so after.
Yeah, they're like, guys, you can put your addresses in now.
Oh, just here. Let's put out a small where you can put your, put your Bells address. Like, you know, these guys are not stupid.
And classic miners.
Classic miners. Look, these guys are, I mean, I've learned they are savages. I mean, I love business and I love competition, but these guys are the top. Tippity top alpha killers
for sure.
So you know they'll make it available, and we saw one, I think, what was it, that was like, we're not going to offer Bells, and it was like, yes you are. Yes you are. Eventually all your miners are going to leave. Like if you can make an, I don't know what it is, an extra $5 a day on your mining rig, you're gonna make $5 a day. When it takes is one button to move, like they're gonna move. And so yeah, everybody will come on board.
Who are they to counter trade Bitmain? You know what I mean? Like Bitmain literally dictates the reward or the difficulty adjustments on Bitcoin, right? Like their release schedule, their production schedule dictates difficulty adjustments, right? Their shipping schedules, their batch schedules, right? Like all these things, they make it happen.
They make it happen. I mean, people who argue that, you know, these chains are somewhat centralized, you know, this is the biggest argument in my view. It's like, yeah, these miners, it's complicated. Like there's no easy solutions in crypto, and, you know, Bitmain and the whale that it is. That's a big one, man. For sure.
I mean, I think they've created an environment where Bitcoin can thrive and Litecoin can thrive. So I don't think they're doing too many shenanigans. If they are, it's certainly like within the margins of still having the environment work. Sure. I really like, there's companies like Locotech, right? That I think it's really important for people to support.
Yep.
We need competition.
Dude, we need it. Yes. 100%.
Yeah, desperately. 100%. Yeah.
It's rough when you're going up against the, you know, 300 pound gorilla or whatever. Yeah. They're, I mean, look, they've been great.
Absolutely.
Million DMs with them this morning. Right. But you understand what they are, and you know, they are in the business of making money and selling boxes and get in line or get lined up. Cause you know, if they want to, you know, what they say basically goes, right. So, it's a challenge, but
I've often wondered, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I've often wondered why they don't, why they even sell the machines. Why not just mine them? I mean, honestly, if you can outcompete everybody, you would be Like, how much Bitcoin would they have if they just
they would destroy? They would destroy the environment, though. People would they lose would trust.
Yeah,
I get it. I get it. But it's
there's a limit to what they
strategy,
can do.
Yeah. And I'm sure they're doing. I mean, as we all know, they do. They front run mining. That's
sure.
And but they have
there's a burn-in
right
process,
that.
Right? Whether it's a day, a week, a month, who knows? But like, there's a burn-in process. You got to test those miners before you shut them out. You know.
But I mean, that's. But it, again, it's with they're well within their right to just not sell them. Like,
yeah, I'd rather that. Than
glad
that
they do sell them.
Didn't have to RMA it, you know, like that's annoying. You got a batch of miners, you got to send half of them back because they don't work. You know, it's time is money.
These guys are smart and yeah, they're in the business of making money. And they've, it's interesting. That's for sure. This was a big eye opener. I did not really, and I still don't fully understand the mining game. Obviously it's complicated like any, you know, significant business. But I learned a lot over the last 10 months for sure about mining.
Yeah, it's interesting. I got to say, man, I'm forgetting his name. Who's the young guy? Luke at the summit, seeing him speak. And, you know, I just was impressed by him. He's just people. Sometimes you can just tell by kind of the way they speak. And a lot, I'm going to sound really like ethereal, but like in his eyes, like you can just see he's got a spark, right?
Good dude.
Super smart dude, really sees the field kind of thing. I've heard your name float around, but you know, getting to talk to you, I feel the same way. Like you guys, I feel like you guys have the right guidance. Your head's in the right place for both you guys. So to hear that you're getting that kind of support is really cool. So I may have to pick up some Bell's coin. I wasn't sure before talking to you what we'd be getting ourselves into. I wish I'd have
I would
last week because I'd have three times as much money.
I would absolutely trade Bell's coin stuck at a dollar forever if it becomes the global currency and freedom money. Like, so my kind of North Star is pretty clear.
It's too late. It's $1.20.
It's too late. I already missed the boat, right? It's so funny, man, how this all works. But you know, I'm very, you know, it's Bell's coin is definitely, obviously, it's a meme coin to a degree, but I think the more interesting thing, at least right now, is the blockchain itself and what's possible. Kind of this like bigger, stronger, faster version of Dogecoin, which I think, you know, I'm trying to lean into right now. You know, the meme coin narrative will play out over time. I think that's kind of just, and the story behind it, obviously that's what grabs everybody at the beginning. But really my focus right now is like, how can we build some cool stuff? How can we get some cool devs over here? Try out some stuff, throw some stuff against the wall. Most of it's probably going to fail, but you know, do some really cool stuff rather than just copy pasta what the other chains are doing. Like actually lead, like actually do something really cool over here. And that's what I'm leaning into now. It might not all work, you know, but the chain itself's hopefully going to live now. And you know, we can become this kind of testing ground for Litecoin and for Bitcoin itself, you know? And so that's my focus now.
No, like, you must really like this bellswall.com.
Oh, you're on there. Yeah. That's man. I mean, like, literally that guy, Owen on Twitter was in one of our spaces and was like, I'm a builder. I want to build stuff. I was like, awesome. Let's do it. And yeah, he just like builds stuff and like, yeah, it's like a suggestion wall for, you know, what he should build next, you know, and just throwing ideas out there and stuff. It's awesome, man. I love that stuff.
Now you can put your lottery up there, Grant, your lottery idea up there.
Absolutely. I think that's where we got that. He was on a space with me, I don't know, this past week. And we were talking about that after he had built the wall. And then we were going through like what ideas had come up, you know, and stuff. So cool, man. That stuff is awesome.
Yeah, it's incredible. I like I like what you're saying. And that's what I've felt like I've run into a little bit on having this drive chains conversation is it morph Litecoins. There's a lot of the, what I'll call that Bitcoin mentality of like operating out of fear a little bit. Like, I don't want to break anything.
Sure.
And that can get really detrimental. And also, like, I do think we need to stray from Bitcoin's path because not that Bitcoin's doing anything wrong, but they're just not doing anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be harmful, that there, you can't continue to just say, well, it's going to go up just because it's going to go up. And that's only the only thing you do with it is put it in a Coinbase account and look at it. Like, I don't understand how that is anything.
How that became the narrative. So interesting. And, I think this is the cycle, obviously, of L2s, right? This is kind of L2 cycle. And I'm not 100% convinced that L2s are the way to go, right? This idea of, it was kind of floated in Bitcoin season two of like, well, every, you know, L1 becomes like a side chain of Bitcoin. That's possible, right? You know, it's possible that each of these kind of, you know, big L1s just become, you know, specialized in their own way. And maybe, you know, Litecoin is digital cash and Ethereum is DeFi and, you know, Bell's coin is NFTs, right? Who knows what these might be? And then it's simply a matter of how do we interface the chains together? Which is actually what my core business is, right? At Ember Vault, which is like, how do chains kind of, how do you move assets around between chains? Which is one of my thesis is that we may end up just with like a bunch of specialized L1s. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see over the next decade how that plays out.
And that may just be the best for decentralization too, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
It's funny because it's almost like you go, yeah, it sounds good. And then someone's go, yeah, but how do I get rich off of that? that doesn't help my coin go up in price. So like, that's not good. We need another plan.
We're seeing it now for sure in the ETH space, right? Where everybody, I mean, you know, Sony launched an L2 or talked about launching an L2 yesterday, right? We have, you know, various NFT projects, which are like, we're going to launch an L2, right? We have Base, we have Blast, you know, all these L2s. You can literally launch an L2 in 15 minutes if you have a couple grand yourself, right? Today. So what happens in 2 years when it's a minute and it costs you $2 to launch an L2? So there's infinite L2s, right? What happens then? What's the value? Where's the value? Why would you do it?
Who's to guarantee they'll exist in 5 years from now?
I mean, again, we're getting back to what's the benefit? What's the use case? And again, so that's kind of why I'm leaning into this idea of like, well, how can I just, let's find those use cases? Because that's where the real winners are. But it's a challenge.
How many L2s have to rug you before you go, I'm not touching an L2 ever again? One?
Yeah.
One time you lose your money in L2, you're like, this is stupid.
Maybe I'm not twice. Playing
these games anymore.
What am I doing? We've seen it now how many times, you know, even with Blast, who I think, you know, Pac-Man is one of the great marketers in the space, you know, they can only give away their token for so long till people are like, well, what is this anymore? It's almost like that had like a 4 month run and it's done, you know, and I don't know. I think actually the reality is Base has this kind of like, you know, Coinbase has a real advantage, you know, with Base as their L2. And it doesn't have a token, which, you know, will speak to, you know, maybe people who want to be in the kind of US regulatory framework where I don't have to worry maybe so much doing stuff here. So maybe they have an advantage, but I don't know.
Yeah. You can't launder money through NFTs on Base, can you?
You can definitely.
That's what these people are doing.
There's this. I don't know if you saw there's a meme coin over there called Brett, right? Where it launched and it was at $1 billion and people are going crazy. Turns out, you know, they pre-mined 99% of the token, right? Controlled the entire supply, you know, and you're just like,
Coinbase did?
No, the people who launched that token.
Oh. Oh, right? Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
it had basically the entire supply, but people are talking about it like it's some fantastic meme coin, and it's like, bro, if you're buying it at $1 billion valuation, you are the exit liquidity, my friend. So anyway, yeah, this is Well, it's part of the reason why people like Bell's coin is that it is like literally mined, right? So there was no pre-mine, so it kind of has this fair narrative, which people obviously this. People don't like, well, they kind of do like the idea of, you know, like Brett with 99% pre-mine, because the number go up is fantastic. Look at this, man. It's a 1,000,000,000% return. Yeah, but for who? I mean, I don't
know. As long as you don't get dumped on, yeah. Like,
I don't know.
Although, you know, now, Animal, like I said, how many times do you get burned before you learn? And maybe it's a lot more than two for a lot of people.
I feel like devs are smart, though. I feel like by nature, a developer doesn't like they're used to just trial and error, and they don't like making the same mistake twice.
Absolutely. Yep.
So perhaps that's why, you know, we've attracted a really good dev to Litecoin, Hector Chu, who's been doing a bunch of stuff, porting MWeb to mobile wallets, BTC Pay Server. And like you said, you guys have, I forgot the name of the developer you're talking about, but you have your own Rockstar dev.
Yep.
And I don't know what their stories are, but it's possible that they were involved with some, you know, tokenage at some point and then saw the light, you know,
exactly.
Saw that proof of stake was the best option.
Talented people would probably gravitate to the chains that are valuable or like meaningful, because they recognize that like building something valuable and worthwhile is more important than just scamming people all day. Like, you know, they're probably, again, they're morally aligned if they're hardworking, good people that are actually talented. Talented people appreciate talented. They don't want to scam people. They want to just make money off their talent.
That is true. Yeah. Talent likes working with talent. Definitely.
You know, they have a reputation to maintain, and they probably already have some source of income that, you know, gives them what they need in life. So why ruin a good thing that they have? You know, why taint their relationship or their reputation?
When can, by the way, when can we expect MWeb on a mobile wallet?
We have it already.
It's already done.
Well, so
officially,
in like testing, right?
Yeah. So there's
kind of
Light Wallet has a beta, or rather, it's an alpha called Newborn. It's called Newborn. But Cake Wallet also has a beta. If you sign up to the beta stream on
Flight something
and
Best Flight
Android and Apple has it as well. What do they call it? Their Launchpad or something.
It's called Test Flight.
Test Flight. Right. Yeah. So you can download the Coinbase, Cake Wallet beta. And their implementation, I got to say, is pretty impressive. You got coin control there. You don't have to download the whole blockchain. You just have to sync the latest, I'm not sure how many blocks, but you have to do some kind of a sync.
Mm-hmm.
It takes maybe 2 hours. And yeah, it works very well. It's super polished.
You know what? I think I messed up. Because when I did download that and I kept going in like, why can't I use this? Do I have to create a new wallet that's like an MWeb, like within the app? Or it's going to be on, I should know this. I got to get these. Cake Wallet sponsors us, by the way, Adam. I should know all about Cake Wallet. I don't right now.
Well, yeah.
And what a great sponsor they are. God. I mean, from a wallet perspective, I have to say, like, I'm not biased when I say this because Cake Wallet is sponsoring us, but they have a great wallet, a great interface, functionality. They've got some kind of swap function. They have a bunch of swap DEXs listed. They've got ChatGPT. You can get, you can pay for that. Some kind of, they have their whole, like a bunch of LLMs you can use. And a great dev team too. From what I've heard, they're top-notch, responsive. Yeah.
All right, you're gonna have to give me a little walkthrough on how to set MWeb up on this animal. But we're gonna have. Okay, just to answer your question though,
The
13th birthday,
it like natively in the wallet, right?
I think on it was October 13th is the 13th birthday of Litecoin. I think that's probably the goal. Have it live on Light Wallet and Cake Wallet. Maybe worst case, you're looking at like Halloween.
Yep.
But it's right around the corner, which is really cool. And I think is going to be, we're seeing a lot of money moving on to MWeb right now because it's on Ledger. So it's hopefully just a matter of a number of weeks here. So it's exciting.
That's awesome.
And I think it's, we talked to a guy from, oh God, I forget these names all the time. Who's the tracking app? What were they called?
Breadcrumbs. Oh, Lorne. Breadcrumbs, yeah.
And, you know, to hear him, to understand where they, what they track today, what they can see and can't see. And yeah, you do start thinking like, yeah, I don't like the idea that essentially my money's being tracked. Anybody can go look at my address and know everything I've done. Like, I don't like that. And
I mean, if you self-custody, really like everybody advocates, right? Like you buy a cup of coffee or you send some money to your friend, just dox yourself.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. I mean, that's why I use Coinbase. Whenever I transact, I use Coinbase.
What did the guy from Breadcrumb say about MWeb?
He didn't know anything about it.
He didn't heard of it.
His whole business is tracking, and he's in like exchanges use his service. Sure. Police, you know, he gets contacted by various police forces and stuff. And yeah, the fact that he hasn't even, and he's looking in there and he's going, I'm not seeing anything. Like, where's this? And we're like, it's not in there. He's like, oh shit. I think he realized, I don't know. It probably will get used for, you know, some nefarious stuff for sure. But
it also be used to
again, you stuff, can't stop, right? Like, it. You can't stop it.
Yeah.
I think the upside is it's probably definitely better, you know, financial privacy, financial sovereignty. Like this is the point. This is what Satoshi set out to do.
100%.
And it's continuing. I want to say it's continuing his vision, his mission. So yeah, worth it, you know.
Agreed. Yep.
It's up to law enforcement to step up their game, you know, not stifle us. Yeah, I just hope that doesn't mean like cameras everywhere, because that would suck.
Yeah,
exactly. Probably that is that because already, what are they going to do? Already exist. That already happens, right? Yeah.
It's like the pot, you know, the frog in the pot, right? It's like, what hit me the other day? Oh, we're going to Nashville, right? You know, you go to get on a plane or whatever now, and you know, because I'm, you know, outside of the country, coming in the U.S. It's like pose for the camera, and that was not on the cards 5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
You were not supposed to have your fingerprints and all that sort of stuff when you were coming in as an American citizen. I'm an American citizen. I wasn't supposed to have to go through that. But
they took your prints?
I've had my prints done before. Yeah. Come in. Yeah. Where put your hand on the scanner. And it's like, if you say no, well, it's like, okay, back to the special room you go. Right. And it's just like, yeah, I feel like we've been slow boiled into just, okay, do whatever, you know? And it's it's terrifying. I think at the end of the day,
it is wild. The compliant ones are tracked endlessly. But meanwhile, it's like,
bro. I mean, during
anybody, COVID, I mean, really, I don't want
to. I understand being compliant. Like, I, you know, who wants to like to go against the herd? What I've realized, what COVID really woke me up to, was, you know, I'm not the guy hiding Anne Frank in my closet. Like, I'm not that strong, right? I realize what a special person it requires to be literally that brave, like to do stuff like that. Require you almost need to be superhuman to do that sort of stuff, because, you know, I got the jab, like I had to do it, like my job, I had to do it. It was required, right? I didn't fight against it because I wasn't willing to give up my job, you know? And so I realized like it's, herd mentality is strong in humans, like to get along. And, you know, I think COVID was a good wake up call to us all. And it helped me a lot to see like, wow, man, you know, take some stock of who I am as a person and realize that you're not this hero that you thought magically we're going to, you know, you would fight against the Nazis, right? It's like, I don't know, man. Like, you realize it's really hard to do that. And I think it was a great call to all of us, and me especially. I just look myself in the mirror and be like, man, you weren't as brave as you thought you were. And you know, be able to, you know, now coming out of that, take stock and be like, well, what are the things that are important to me, and what are the things that I can support, which isn't necessarily super brave, but I can support Litecoin and in what they're trying to do with private money, because I think it's important, right? And I can that's something I can do. Right. And, you know, just trying to lean into things that you think are important and, you know, help humanity.
Right. That's on.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, it was COVID was a learning experience for a lot of people. Paradigm shift after paradigm shift, huge time of confusion and fear. Totally. So, yeah, I mean, we owe it to ourselves to forgive ourselves, forgive our friends or family.
Totally.
You know, you can't blame anyone.
Yep.
Really. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're in a good spot, don't you?
I've got a couple of questions if you still have a bit of time, Adam.
Tons, man. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I don't want to take that anymore. Go ahead. Yeah.
Hardware wallets. Is that on the roadmap?
There's no roadmap.
No, okay.
Let's discuss it. You know, there's no roadmap. I like to say, you know, people come in, well, when's the dev team going to do some marketing? I'm like, bro, you are the dev team. Congratulations. You're the new CEO, man.
but I'm not qualified for that kind of job. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But yes, obviously I'd love to have, hardware wallet support for Bells. I think that's something maybe a little bit, we got to get more traction. I mean, the reality is it's like people have to be aware of Bells. Nobody's going to support us. You know, Ledger's not going to put us in if they don't feel like they're going to get, you know, a bunch of users using this. So,
right.
You know, I think we got to get a lot more traction, a lot more awareness. So, but yeah, I'd love to have that. Right now, the most secure way to hold Bells is, you know, run a full node and, you know, you could store your private keys offline. Like that's the most secure way, which yeah. I encourage people to do. I mean, you'd be stunned, man. The number of people who still hold, who literally go on the exchange to buy the Bells and just keep it there. On the exchange.
Yeah.
Bro, get it off. At least get it into your own wallet, you know? So yeah, it's a constant battle, man. Most people, self-sovereignty is not for most people. It's barely for me, right? So I realize for most people that's not ideal. But yeah, we're working on it. We'll eventually get a hardware wallet to support Bells for sure.
So the Bells Coin Core is more, you'd say, safer than Nintendo wallet?
I mean, look, Nintendo wallet's a hot wallet, right? It's on your web browser. So
yeah, right.
For sure, Core is safer than that. And then within Core, you know, it's just like, it's like an old school kind of, you know, Bitcoin, you know, wallet where, you know, you can export the private keys, keep them on whatever, a thumb drive or something like that.
Yeah. The only thing is you do need to be connected to the internet.
To create, no, you can be offline to create the
wallet. Oh, really? Okay.
You can be
offline. Can you generate addresses offline too?
Yeah, you can generate addresses.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought you had to sync the blockchain and like all this other stuff. You have to sync
the blockchain. I mean, I'm not fully technical on like what that means. Okay. Ever, you know, but obviously your biggest risk is your computer's compromised.
In right. Theory. But that's the thing, right? Like if I were to create like a long-term cold storage wallet, like I'd want to do it air-gapped totally from the beginning.
Yeah. That's not possible really, I don't think.
Not yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one thing that for like that's important, I think. Totally. So I mean it's Bells Coin Core, I'm sure is great. And the reality is if you install Windows or Linux on a new machine, like you're gonna be fine. Right. That's the reality. But there's an opportunity for people that, you know, aren't maybe aware of the risks, that don't do that, that install it on a compromised machine. And like so there's an opportunity for people to make mistakes. And I think those are largely eliminated with a hardware wallet.
100%.
100%. I have one more question that's super off topic, but related to you living as an expat in Costa Rica. Costa Rica's got a pretty large regenerative medicine sector. I don't know if you're aware of this or not.
Not really, but
interesting. No, okay.
I mean, a little bit. I know medical tourism and all that kind of stuff. We get kind of different silos of tourism here. Mm-hmm. Medical tourism is one. Dentistry is kind of this other one where you can get the work done kind of very inexpensively. They also do plastic surgery is kind of this other that's in there, but regenerative that I hadn't heard about other than like, cause I'm over 50, I've gone and got my like, you know, T registered and, you know, that sort of stuff. And so is that what you're talking about? This kind of like,
I was talking about stem cells specifically.
Okay. Oh no, that I don't. Yeah,
because I heard that I am obsessed with stem cells. I think the fact that they're not widely available in North America is criminal, and that whichever politicians or lobbyists are responsible for blocking it, should be held accountable for all the pain and death that they caused. I mean, that's pretty strong. And like, but I wholeheartedly believe it. I've been to Mexico a couple of times. I initially had a rotator cuff injury that was causing me a ton of pain.
Totally.
I couldn't sleep without painkillers. Yep. Doctors here in Canada, I'm Canadian, by the way. Doctors here didn't even have time to see me. You know, I made an appointment with my GP. She checked it out. She's like, okay, yeah, okay, I need to send you to a specialist. I didn't get a call back from the specialist's office to make an appointment until 3 months after. And then my appointment was like 6 months after that.
Bro, so, socialized medicine. If you want to talk about socialized medicine, I got so many stories from Costa Rica that'll just make you want to burn down the government, literally burn it down.
And is it socialized down there?
It's and it's terrible. Yeah. Nobody uses it. The moment you have enough money to not use it, you opt out of the system. Socialization. Look, I'm a libertarian. I started as a communist in my 20s. I am fully libertarian now. And that is simply through running businesses, dealing with government, working for government for a period of 5 years. That will completely make you a free market guy and anti-government. And seeing people who literally needed to go into an MRI because they maybe had cancer. And okay, great. You're scheduled for 4 months out. Like, it's terrible.
No, and I mean, doctors here, they were just going to give me stronger and stronger anti-inflammatories until my whole system was ravaged, right? And like, thankfully, we have the technology, and like, I was able to look and do some research and find that stem cell therapy was available in Mexico.
So it didn't. I mean, shoulder. In a former life, I had spas and was a massage therapist, and I know shoulder's one of the hardest ones to actually like fix and heal.
I still have a torn anterior and posterior labrum, you know, but I had a bunch of bursitis, a bunch of tendonitis and all this stuff. And I got a bunch of stem cells injected in my shoulder and it saved my life. Honestly, I was at the point where like,
that's incredible, dude.
I couldn't snowboard anymore. Like any small bump would just cause like a wave of pain to radiate from my shoulder to the rest of my body.
It literally healed you. That's amazing.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, if you look at all the people that are hooked on opioids in America, That's what this stuff will fix, right? Like if you replace opium with stem cell therapy, suddenly you get rid of like the opium epidemic. People have quality of life, you know? The problem is, of course, that pharma companies can't really patent stem cell technology.
Back to this blind incentive thing, man. And where's the incentive? And the whole idea of socialized medicine. I mean, I don't want to take your, pod off track here, but God, we could talk for days.
No, we're gonna have the stem cell guy on the pod at some
point. Yeah, we're happy to venture off crypto completely, but you know, today or whatever, RFK dropped out. I was gonna support RFK because I do think the little I've learned about the pharmaceutical and the whole medical industry and how research is done, if you want to call it quote unquote research, and how gamed that whole system has become. I think it's an atrocious system. I mean, it really, it's bad even in America that's not socialized, right? Even the pure privatization has led to its own problems. And, I hope they say, RFK
is not privatized at all. It's controlled by insurance companies and the biggest insurers, the U.S. government. And it's regulated
to death.
It's not free market at all. I mean, my mom would tell the story of, you know, when I was a kid and, you know, the doctor visit was, you know, $8 and, you know, competition and free markets. Literally it's the only thing that works and we have experience and know it's the only thing that works, but yet we still fall into this model of, you know, insurance and governments coming in and stepping in and providing insurance and paying for stuff with insurance. And it's literally the worst model. Like the obvious example and the ones people like to use, what if you had to have insurance for your food? You know, get ready for, you know, $800 loaves of bread. I mean, it's like, it's just the worst, but we've got ourselves in this cycle and I just don't see many good alternatives to get out of it. And
it's so entrenched. Like, so the biggest excuse here for people or for doctors not being able to recommend, or I guess, what is the FDA not being able to recommend stem cell therapy, They say it's because there's not enough research. But then you hear stories about, was it Berkeley University? They were going to publish a paper about some research they did on expanding stem cells, like taking umbilical cord tissue and expanding those stem cells to have a greater yield. And apparently one of their, the night before they were going to publish this paper, I think it was Pfizer. Don't quote me on that. But some big pharma company said, like, listen, if you publish this, we're going to pull your funding. You know?
Yeah.
So these guys are super powerful. They're mm-hmm. just, you know, throwing their weight around, and they don't care about us. They just care about the money.
Well, and it is, and it comes back to since everything is rooted in fiat money, the government can essentially, by proxy, control 100%. The whole game, you know? And that's where you're just like, there's no escaping. I was at a medical instrument manufacturer this last week, and I went to their headquarters, and it was like it was out of a movie. This place was so futuristic looking, and I'm just sitting there going, there's so much fucking money in this. Like, there's so much money being made that it would make your head spin, you know? And it's all because it's essentially government funded, right? As the flow of taxpayer money that goes through these companies is unbelievable. But what I was going to say, though, like with RFK dropping out, like he was the guy I was supporting because he understands this and can speak to like the criminal nature of what's going on. And I hope that maybe Trump announces he's going to make him what director of Health and Human Services. I mean, that's even like thinking that there's that system is going to change because of one person. I know I'm insane to even speak that. Yeah, but it feels like, but at least somebody who can actually verbalize it accurately to be able to have some sway over the general public, I think is a big step to identify the problem and to get people to realize like we have to go a different direction. We can't continue to give these people more power.
And not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, right? Like, cause he's been fighting these guys his whole career, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So he knows
him. I know from personal experience, having worked for the US government here in Costa Rica. And what you learn pretty quickly is that in big bureaucracies, it doesn't even matter. The aligned incentives in bureaucracies is everybody keeping their job, moving up, not making waves, staying in their job. Like, and it doesn't even matter if you have a disruptor come in, or it very rarely matters. I can't even really point to any examples of it really mattering, because the aligned incentives of everybody in the organization is to just keep the ship running and keep it going forward because of my salary and my benefits and my everything, right? And so that's just the way I look at it, is that's just the way human organizations work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of why I like Vivek, because Vivek, for the first time I've heard from a politician, is like, well, how do we trim the tree? How do we cut these back? And I don't think there's any, you know, my personal view on US politics is he's like this only person, like nobody else is really talking about that. How do you really just trim these trees? How do you cut it back? How do you actually get rid of the bureaucratic states? And I, you know, you see it with Malay and in Argentina, which, I mean, this is where I get hopeful, because it's like, oh my God, it happened in Argentina, and I know a lot of Argentinians here. I never thought it could happen in Argentina.
But you see how bad it had to get though before it happened?
It had to get really bad, and I think, you know, maybe that we have to get way worse. And
I hope not, man.
I hope not too. Really do. I really hope not.
Honestly, Trump is the guy that could do it. He's just like, he's not the guy, unfortunately. He does not speak to things like in Argentina, where he would say, look, we need to just cut this, and this. It needs to be gone. Like, that was radical. He has the like the ability to say those things, but he just doesn't have the knowledge to say it, right? He's not actually thinking, he's not actually caring. He wants to win. He doesn't care about freedom like down there.
Did you hear how in that talk he had with Elon about him proposing to Elon that he runs some cabinet in the government, some efficiency cabinet?
That sounds like a whole new branch of government. Right,
the director of governmental efficiency or something.
It's the efficiency department. And
Department of Government Efficiency.
It makes me think of like, I don't know, it's like in Miramar, they have the Department of Happiness. And it's like, whenever I see that, I see a whole bunch of, you know, Americans going, oh, that's so great. I'm like, bro, you have never worked for the government. You do not know what you are cheering. Like you are.
The first step to cutting the government is to create a new department.
Yeah. There you go.
Exactly. We need to monitor. We need a whole group of people to monitor the rest of the government. That's a good idea.
I worked for basically the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance here in Costa Rica. So this is the part of the government in the U.S. that provides assistance for like hurricane relief or earthquakes. So we're like the first responders and give out money and stuff. And the joke within the organization was that it costs us $500,000 to give out $50,000. That was the joke, right? Mm-hmm. And I could tell you stories for the rest of the day today about waste and inefficiency. Like it's, you have no idea what it's like. It is, it's the worst of the worst. And we were an efficient organization within the U.S. government. Like people looked at us like the cowboys. They're wild out there. They hardly, you know, there's almost no checks and balances within our organization. It's a total disaster.
They don't ever have layoffs. It doesn't happen.
They had to create within our organization. The strategy was everybody had to renew your contracts every 4 years. That was the firing mechanism. So when they really, 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 really didn't like you, which was almost never, they just wouldn't renew your contract. That's the way they would fire people. Nobody gets fired. We literally had dozens of people who did nothing, like literally no work, like nothing, zero, sat in their office and collected a paycheck. And that wasn't even the worst of it. I mean, it's like, and this is top to bottom. This is everywhere in government. It's beyond belief. But you can't really experience it unless you've either experienced it or you've tried to actually build a business and bump up against it. And so it is what it is. Most normies are never going to get it, never going to understand. And so it's kind of up to the rest of us to actually change things, you know? And so that's why I'm bullish on crypto.
Amen, man. Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, hey, I really appreciate it. This is a good conversation. We probably could talk for another couple hours. You need to be in our Twitter spaces because it's this, but sometimes they go on like 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, DM me when you have spaces and stuff and I'll pop in, man. Because
I do them every Wednesday at 9 Eastern.
9 p.m. Eastern?
9 p.m. Eastern.
Oof. Y'all are crazy.
You go to bed early? Are you an early bird?
A couple hours behind you. So it's like, yeah, that still sometimes works for me, man.
All right. Well, maybe you're just not cut out for the underground. All right.
Don't say that.
No, it was really, it was good talking to you, man. I definitely feel like we could sit here all day, but go check out Bell's Coin. Like I said, I'm going to have to figure out how to get this wallet downloaded and I'll grab a few. 69 it's not too late, dude. Probably. I'll grab like 69 of them.
There you go.
All right. All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Adam. And
appreciate you guys.
Yeah, see you guys
later. Thank you.